It's time once again for the Rose Chat Podcast, your source of inspiration and motivation to achieve the rose garden of your dreams. Join award-winning gardeners Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington as they explore the world of roses and chat with the world's top rose experts, authors, artists, curators, and more. Try Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure and alfalfa teas. Find them online at manuretea.com.
Well, hey, y'all. Welcome to another edition of the Rose Chat Podcast. Now, if you love gardening, you're going to love tonight's guest. C.L. Forneri joins us to talk about her new book, Coffee for Roses, published by St. Lin's Press. Now, it's all about gardening myths. Now, growing up in the Deep South, I was exposed to all manner of old wives' tales, about life and about gardening, and you know, things like if you try to move your peonies, the woodpeckers will come peck your eyes out. Teresa, have you ever heard of such a thing?
Oh my, Chris, now that's a doozy, and I can honestly tell you that I have never heard that one. But I'm sure our guest has heard just about everything.
That sounds like a Hitchcock myth to me.
Well, you just heard CL. She's in the virtual studio, and we'll be chatting with her about gardening myths as well as finding out what she grows in her garden. So stay with us. There's more Rose Chat coming your way.
Since 1999, Rose Mania has been your one-stop source for all your rose care needs. From chemicals and safety equipment to garden tools and fertilizers, Rose Mania offers the top products at some of the best prices around. They even sell bare root roses. Rose Mania carries a full line of products to help battle fungal diseases, insects, and mice, while not harming the beneficial insects you want in your garden. Shipping is free on merchandise orders over $25. Their staff of consulting rosarians is available to answer your rose questions, so visit them today at rosemania.com.
Hey, CL, welcome to Rose Chat.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're so glad to have you, and I just have to know, have you ever heard that disturbing myth that Chris shared with us about moving your peonies and woodpeckers pecking your eyes out?
No, I haven't, but it sounds like somebody's drug overdose dream to me.
I don't even know what to say to that one. I can't even believe that we have stumped the Mythbuster. Only out of the Deep South would we have stumped the Mythbuster. I can't even say that. Mythbuster. Oh, my goodness. Okay, let's move on. You know, it seems that every gardener has a unique story on why they garden. So share with us what or who sparked your interest in gardening.
I'm sorry, say that again.
What or who sparked your interest in gardening?
Oh, well, I think my interest in plants was sparked because I was blessed to grow up in a time when parents pushed their kids outside and told them not to come back until mealtime. And we had to make our fun outdoors. And so, you know, hiding out under the bushes or climbing up in trees, it was our playtime. And that's, I think, where I got my love of plants and my interest in the natural world. And that just sort of naturally led me into the garden.
Well, I remember, I think it was in the book, or maybe it was when we were together last spring, but you mentioned that maybe you stole some plants and had a plant sale or went door-to-door selling plants.
Well, that was my first,
about that.
My first foray into professional horticulture was when I was around 9 years old and a friend and I decided that we needed some money to buy some sweets. And so we took the pots that were stored behind the garage of the house time, and we filled them full of dirt from behind the garage, and we then scampered around the neighborhood and picked flowers from all the neighbors' yards and stuck the stems in the pots of dirt, loaded them up into our radio flyer wagon, and then sold them door to door, often to the very people that we had stolen the plants from in the first place. I well, can only imagine that we were cute because we did manage to sell some.
Oh, I bet you were very cute. I bet you brought a lot of smiles with those stone plants.
Well, fortunately, as an adult, I've learned a lot about both ethics and the importance of root systems.
Well, obviously, because you have an amazing garden. We love social media around here, and because of social media, I've got to see pictures of your garden through Facebook. And I remember one picture you posted I just went crazy over this summer sometime. It was a morning scene, and you were having some yummy-looking oatmeal by a table that overlooked your beautiful garden. There might have even been some fog. It was just totally enchanting. So don't you think we were just best in the garden?
That was the view from my front porch, I think. So my front porch is both my favorite breakfast spot in the summer and my summer office.
Nice. So pretty. You know, it's pretty obvious what Chris and I love to grow, but we're wondering, what are your favorite plants to grow?
Well, I often say my favorite plant is whatever I looked at 10 minutes ago. But I grow all manner of plants. I grow annuals and perennials and vegetables and roses and all kinds of flowering shrubs and trees. So and just about everything I love, you know, from moss to hydrangeas, you can find it on my property.
Now, you have all these different things. Do you grow them in separate beds, or do you pretty much grow everything together, or how do you do that? What's the layout like?
Well, I have certain beds that have a little bit of a theme to them. For example, out my kitchen door, there's an area I call the fragrance garden, where the majority of plants, shrubs, roses, annuals, and perennials in that area have been chosen for fragrance. Mm. And then out my front door is an entry garden where the theme is loosely flowers that are blue, yellow, coral, and white. I like that combination. And again, it's a combination of shrubs and perennials and annuals. And I have moving up into my front yard is where our vegetable garden is. And surrounding the vegetable garden is an area I call Annual Alley. And that's my place to try a different combination of annuals every year.
So your vegetable garden is in the front yard. I know there's been a move for people doing that. So you have already done that. You've got vegetables out front.
Yes, because that was the place where the sun is. And so, and I happen to have a fairly large front yard between my house and the street, and there's quite a bit of room there for Annual Alley and our vegetable garden, and then an area that for me is both cutting garden and test garden, so that when people send me plants to try, I have a place that I can stick them and see how they perform.
Wow. And my grandmother had her vegetable garden. Well, part of her vegetable garden was in the front yard. She had all her tomatoes and okra growing in the front yard, and then all her other vine-type vegetables she grew in the back. I never really asked her why she did that, but now thinking back, it's probably more of a space issue than anything.
Sure. Well, once you get hooked on fresh-picked vegetables, you look for every place that they will grow the best.
Oh, I totally agree with that. If I can tuck a plant in and it'll get sun and it'll produce a fruit, I'm all about it.
Right.
The bigger our trees get, the more we chase the sun, even to the point of trimming the trees a little bit. You know, it's kind of like, oh, just trim a little bit so we'll get another hour, but don't trim it too much because we need the shade. So yeah, we're always chasing the sun around here too. You mentioned that you had all these different things, and you mentioned even doing some test gardening. And on Rose Chat, we often hear from those that are just getting into gardening, and they need advice. So could you share some of your top tips for our newbies?
Well, sure. I think, first of all, the important thing is to approach plants and gardening with, as a spirit of adventure, I guess. Look at it as an experience. It's, too many people, I think of gardening as like they think of furnishing their house. When you furnish your living room, you pick a sofa and a chair and a table and a lamp. And once it's done, it pretty much stays that way. But a garden is almost the complete opposite. You choose plants and you put them in and they grow and they change and some thrive and some sulk and some die. And so if we go into our landscapes viewing it as an experience, it's an adventure, we don't know where it's leading us, then we can take delight in whatever happens and learn from whatever happens and enjoy what happens and, you know, go forward with it.
Mm-hmm. When people often ask me, you know, what should I plant? You know, the first question is, what do you like? You know, what are you going to enjoy?
Sure.
So, great tip. Very good tip.
And match the plants to the amount of work you want to do or don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Match the plants to the conditions you have rather than trying to plant your rose garden in the deep shade. You know, if you have deep shade, then find the things that will thrive in deep shade. So match the plants to what you've got and look around your area and see what does well for other people. And, you know, take that information to heart, because if you see that no one in your area is growing blue hydrangeas, there might be a reason for that.
That's so true. So true. Okay, let's start with some myth busting. And I'm going to start out with one that's near and dear to my heart. And you're going to think it's going to be about a rose, but it's not. It's about tomato suckers. Do we trim them or not trim them?
Well, my first question is, why on earth do we call these things suckers? You know, they are not sucking anything. They are stems of the plant that are growing and photosynthesizing and producing energy for that plant. And if we're growing indeterminate varieties of tomatoes, those so-called suckers grow into stems that flower and make fruit. So when you take them off of indeterminate varieties of tomatoes, you're actually making less fruit. Now, the truth of the matter is about suckers is that if you remove them in hot areas, it does improve the circulation for the plant. And in places where they have really hot and humid summers, that can help a tomato plant. It also will produce slightly earlier tomatoes on a tomato plant. But I don't know about you. I don't want earlier tomatoes. I don't really want bigger tomatoes. I want more tomatoes.
Good point. I got to tell you, this is a big one for me because I never checked on it. My dad told me to do it. He told me over and over and over, so I just did it. So I didn't, you know. And if I didn't take the time to do it, I felt guilty. So you've not only busted the myth, you've busted the guilt. I will never feel guilty again.
Excellent. I'm all for guilt-free gardening.
I know. Oh, I know. Okay, so what about perennials in the garden? We hear all the time that if you plant perennials, it's going to be less work. So what do you say?
Well, that's what I hear from my customers frequently, is they say, I'm tired of planting annuals every year. I want perennials because they're less work. And anyone who has ever grown a perennial garden knows that perennials are wonderful. They are magical for providing that kaleidoscope of color. You know, that the garden is constantly changing and things coming out at different times, but it's truly the most high-maintenance garden you can plant. And the reason is primarily the weeds. The weeding in a perennial garden is formidable because weeds don't just grow in between perennials, they grow inside perennials, you know? That iris that lets all the sunshine to its roots, that's valuable real estate for weeds in there. So, and then there are some perennials that require frequent editing. There are perennials that self-seed and you have to constantly pull them out. There are perennials that are downright thugs. They want to take over the world.
And their perennial overachievers.
Yeah. So a perennial garden, I often compare perennial gardening to being a fifth grade teacher. That, you know, when you're a teacher in the fifth grade, you've got 20-odd kids who all have different learning styles and different home lives and different talents and abilities and challenges. And as a teacher, you have to find out what their learning style is and play to their strengths and help them with their weaknesses. And at the same time that you're doing that to all 20 children or 25 children, you have to keep order in the classroom. That's what it's like to have a perennial garden.
Oh, my gosh, that is so true. That is so true.
Maintain order at all costs.
That's right. You have to get to know each of these plants and what they can do and what they can't do and how to, you know, help them and handle them while maintaining order in the landscape.
Mm-hmm. It is constant. It is constant. Beautiful, fun, but it is constant. You're so right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I love perennials. I have many perennial gardens. And one of the things I do like about perennials is that they do bring you into your garden frequently in a way that, you know, you might not otherwise go. I would never go into the garden and sit down on the ground and spend 5 minutes, you know, eye to eye with those plants, let alone an hour and a half. If it wasn't for the weeding that had to be done in the perennial garden.
Mm-hmm.
And yet there's such gifts in doing that, you know. Weeding is a form of meditation. It is it is soul restoring. So
it is. I can't tell you how many of life's problems I've solved, weeding and mulching and
absolutely.
Absolutely. It's so true. So true. And you mentioned irises. When I sit down by the irises to do the weeding and the tending, I'm 5 years old again. That smell, that fragrance that comes from an iris when you are nose to nose, like you were when you were a child, there is nothing sweeter than getting up close and personal with something, a fragrance from your youth.
That is the gift of one of the gifts of the perennial garden. And, you know, to my mind, the least important aspect of perennials is that most of them come back every year. So, you know, that sense of discovery and moving through the seasons and each one bringing up special quality into your landscape, that's what's really wonderful to my mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, CL, here in the Midwest, we have clay soil, and we hear all the time that we can lighten clay by adding sand. What say you?
Well, I say that you get something that closely resembles cement with that approach.
I have some of that in my yard. I totally recognize that.
And I've gardened in pure clay. I've gardened when I lived out in the Mid-Hudson Valley. One time I had a neighbor who was plowing up our vegetable garden, and of course when all the other neighbors saw that the farmer up the road, Albert, was plowing, they stopped by to see what was going on. And so pretty soon I had a collection of all these old guys standing around me, and at one point one of them nodded and said sagely, "Some people got the rock and some people got the clay. You got the rock and the clay." And that's what I had. I had the rock and the clay. And so I, you know, I know. But frankly, clay is kind of like sand. I've now gardened on Cape Cod where it's pure sand. And the answer to both situations is the same, organic matter. Organic matter from the top down, just like nature does it.
From the top down. Good advice. Good advice. Okay, here's another one. In our garden, we love to attract hummingbirds. Who wouldn't want a hummingbird visiting their garden? Are we going to have more hummingbirds if we plant red flowers? We read that all the time.
Well, that is the myth, that hummingbirds are attracted to the color red. But as I did the research for this book, I found out that what matters to hummingbirds is the same thing that matters to realtors. Location, location, location.
And oh, I've never heard of it that way.
Yeah, hummingbirds, they like high nectar flowers, and they don't care if those high nectar flowers are blue, purple, green, white, red, doesn't matter to them. I think that on hummingbird feeders that are predominantly red, or they have red openings, or they tell you to put red food coloring in the liquid, I'm convinced that all that red on hummingbird feeders is merely to attract the humans that are buying those feeders.
You might have a point there.
And those red plastic hummingbird feeders look a little unnatural, if you ask me. Just a little.
Well, the research shows that hummingbirds, they constantly search for food sources, as all birds do. A hummingbird, if it finds a high nectar food source, it will keep coming back. It doesn't matter what color it is. And if that food source disappears, if that red hummingbird feeder is moved 5 feet to the right, the hummingbird will come to the original location. And if the nectar source isn't there, it doesn't look around for the color red. It zooms off to the next location where it knows that high nectar is going to be present. So just, you know, any of the plants that attract hummingbirds, in my garden, the favorite of hummingbirds is salvia black and blue.
Well, eventually you knew we'd get to roses, and this week one of our fans, Aaron Harris, asked on Instagram, you mean coffee grounds are not good for roses? So what says CL about that?
Well, it's not that coffee grounds aren't good for roses. We all know roses love organic matter, right? They are organic matter hogs, and whether that organic matter comes from coffee grounds, banana peels, or compost, or manure, or seaweed, the roses don't care. Coffee grounds are fine for roses, but coffee grounds don't have any special rose woo-woo.
Well, you know, my mama always saved coffee grounds, saved tea leaves, even saved banana peels and put them around her roses. She swore by them.
Well, and it was organic matter, and I'm sure that her roses were thrilled to get that organic matter. So,
yeah,
you know, putting that out, you know, and if you're a tea drinker, you don't have to be left out. Put the tea bags out there. But if you don't like coffee or banana peels or eggs or, you know, whatever, go for the broccoli stems around those roses.
Broccoli and roses. That sounds like a country song, doesn't it?
That's great. I thought you were going to say a book, and I said, no, not a book. But, yes, country song, maybe. I think you might have something.
Yeah.
If we're going to go with the trendiest vegetable, then kale and roses.
That's right.
You are so on trend with that one for sure. So true. Okay, we have one more rose one we just have to talk about. You know, if we deadhead our roses, we need to cut them down to the first set of 5 leaflets, right?
I did that for years. You know, I would be out in my garden, and for every single rose I was deadheading, I was taking off that old, dried, spent flower so that to remove the seeds, and I'd be counting, oh, no, 1, 2, 3, can't cut there, 1, 2, 3, can't cut there, 1, 2, 3, can't cut there. Oh, here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, and my time in the garden was like an episode of Sesame Street, you know. The deadheading of these roses is brought to you by the number 5.
I love it.
Oh, I love it.
About, oh, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or more, I read about a study in Great Britain where they asked rosarians in rose gardens all over the country to test this, that, you know, people have been doing this forever, and to test if this was true. And when someone was growing 2 or more roses of the same type, they asked them to prune half of those roses with that, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 myth, and the other have to take the hedge trimmers and just chop, chop, chop off with their heads. And do you know that all of the rosarians found that the plants that they deadheaded by chop, chop, chopping bloomed, rebloomed just as well and sometimes even better than the ones Ooh. That they had meticulously pruned down to a set of five leaves. And when I read that study, I thought, hallelujah. This
I'm liberated.
I discovered hours of time.
No more math in the rose garden.
That's right. No more counting. No more counting leaflets.
Well, Theo, we can't let you go without hearing about some of your favorite roses. So tell us about them.
Well, roses are something that I have... shrub roses that I love for their reliability and their ease. So, and some of those are the Drift series of roses. I have several of those that just year after year I adore. So that's one set. I love my home run red shrub rose. And although I have to say it is a real prickly guy, but it just produces these bright red flowers all summer long for me, and I love that. And I love the Oh So Easy series as well. And then what I love to do is plant some others. I have some David Austins, I have a Graham Thomas and a Gertrude Chico rose, and I plant other roses that are more for not the ease and not necessarily. Some of them are reliable, some of them are not. Some of them live for several years, some of them don't. Frankly, I'm willing to plant a rose as an annual, right? Yeah, you can go and buy three or four rose plants and put them in, and it's an instant rose garden, and the joy that those flowers bring me for one summer is worth every penny, and I don't care if the next year they have horrible black spot and I rip them out, that's fine. I got my money's worth.
I feel the exact same way. Do you have any rugosas in your beautiful garden?
No, rosy rugosas are the thugs they are sort of paired in my area with Rosa multiflora. Those are two absolute weeds for us. And, they first take over the rose garden, then they move on to the lawn, and pretty soon they've taken over the neighbor's property as well. So.
Oh, my. Well, I have several rugosas, and so far they're well-behaved, so I enjoy them. And they're so fragrant that, I might let them go a little farther anyway.
We on Cape Cod have Rosa rugosa all over our beaches. So they are,
I see.
They're the weed rose with along with Rosa multiflora for us. And, yes, they're fragrant. I adore the rose hips. The good news is you can't kill them. You run over them with a lawnmower every spring, and they're back gangbusters. So,
well, if you've got them taken over, you get to enjoy them without having to have them in your yard. Great.
Yeah. Not for my garden, as I say. We enjoy them on the beach.
Good idea. Well, CL, this has been great fun. We thank you so much for joining us tonight. And thanks so much for this witty but very helpful guide to better and more rewarding gardens without the guilt. I'm very happy about that.
Well, thank you. The book Coffee for Roses was such fun to write. So I'm hoping that people have as much fun reading it as I had writing it.
Well, they're also going to find out that by reading this book, it's going to get them out of a few chores. So that's always nice, too.
Absolutely.
Now, I know our listeners will want to order a copy of CL's book. It's Coffee for Roses and 70 Other Misleading Myths About Backyard Gardening. Now, we provided a link to this excellent gardening resource on the show page at rosechatpodcast.com. You can go to Amazon, type in Coffee for Roses and pick up a copy there and at your local bookstore. You can follow CL on Twitter. She's The Garden Lady, and on her popular website of the same name. You know, until next time, we're out of time for now. So happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.
Thanks for listening to the Rose Chat Podcast with Chris Van Cleve and Teresa Byington. Hear previous podcasts via our website, rosechatradio.com, or listen to this podcast via iTunes and Stitcher apps. Be sure and give us a 5-star rating and share this show with your social networks. Your friends will thank you. Join us next time for another edition of The Rose Chat. Rose Chat is a production of the Rose Chat Media Group, Birmingham, Alabama.